I think most people recall the basics, but just to whiz through a couple of the background facts here for those who do need a reminder, it was not a one-day event. This is a situation that had been brewing for some time, and in early August of 2012, mine workers downed tools at the Lonmin Platinum Mine in Marikana. Tensions running very high between the rival unions NUM and AMCU. There were perceptions, accusations that the NUM leadership had become too close to mine management. That had led to a drop-off in membership of NUM around the mine. And the situation was fraught well before the 16th of August. The strike itself began on the 10th of August when around about 3,000 workers walked off the mine in protest because management was not meeting them to discuss wage demands as they were calling for. The first deaths occurred as early as the 11th of August. And of course, in the days that followed, there would be 10 killings, six mine workers, two security guards at Lonmin, as well as two police officers losing their lives in the build-up to what happened on the 16th of August. But of course, it was on the 16th that the main event of the police opening fire on that group of workers who had been making their way down from the Kopi, where they had been stationed close to one of the nearby informal settlements. Those waves of shooting leaving 34 people dead and 78 injured. And that made it the most lethal use of force against civilians since the Soweto uprising in 1976. As I mentioned earlier, we saw it with our own eyes. We heard it with our own ears. And we have some audio to share for you to take us back to that day. It's not easy to listen to if you think it might upset you. 20 seconds, just to warn you in advance that we are going to share what happened on the day as the shooting unfolded. It's almost like listening to popcorn popping in a pot, isn't it? That's starting so slow, so soft, thinking, what is this that I'm hearing? Is it, it could have been a car backfiring. And then that sudden volley of shots and realizing what it is that you're hearing. And for me, what's almost more surprising is the delay in the response of the background noise that you would have expected to hear. It wasn't like a Hollywood movie of screaming. Not from what we heard, though, but I'm thinking that our first guest today will have a perspective to share with us, because as much as that audio must send chills down our spines, it must do even worse for him. He was there on the day watching that tragedy unfold in the absolute thick of it. Felix Tlangamandla, these days photographic editor for the Daily Maverick, but at the time of the shooting 10 years ago, he was on assignment for News 24 in Marikana. And he'd worked very hard on cultivating contacts within the striking miners group, and that meant that he had a front row seat to what happened on the 16th of August 2012. Felix is with us to reflect on his memories and tell us what he saw that day. Felix, thank you for making time for us on what I'm sure must be a difficult day for you every day, because memories like that don't just fade away, do they? Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Pippa and the listeners. Yeah, memories like those will never fade away. And it's like sorting out washing when it comes to August. Sorting out washing for my laundry, because yeah, I have to go through all these images again for events like that. As I'm in Marikana today, You played that clip and I listened to it and I was literally behind those miners when they were being shot at, and police were like sort of shouting. I was hiding behind a massive rock, Standing up, taking a picture, and I was engulfed in thick tear gas. And at some point, I thought I was suffocating and I ran to a close by shack. That's when police were screaming again at me, saying, move away, move away. I mean, it happened so fast, and it just evoked a lot of emotions, that video clip, that clip that you just played now.
Yeah. I mean, Felix, the fact that you were where you were, right behind the miners, you had a line of sight on this particular event that very few reporters had. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to be in that unique position? You'd been covering the build-up to the 16th of August several days. I know you'd been going to and from Marikana and working on your contacts within the community, trying to get access to the striking miners to hear their stories with some degree of success, meaning that these were people you had spent time with, you'd shared meals with, you'd had long conversations with. But how did you actually come to be where you were that day?
We couldn't gain entry actually to the coffee testing first because police have cut off the entire Marikana area, entire coffee. But then through the contacts that we've built through the days leading up to the 16th, we managed to phone a couple of guys who live in Ganeng, and they told us there's a substation, there's just drive next to it, there's a dead road, use that dead road to access. We surprised the police and the media when we surfaced through that dead road next to the substation. And from then we were back and forth with the miners and the police. Miners urged the police not to chase us away from the copy with the relationships that we had with Mambush. Basically, I think 30 minutes, literally 30 minutes before, phoned me, the man in the green blanket, and said to me, look, I want you to send police to me. We've now agreed with the police that we're not going to listen to what they want us to do. So I sent Poloko, may his soul rest in peace, Pastor Nelia this year, and Lucas Letoaba to Mambush. And then that's when the book came about, we are going to kill each other to the heart. That's what basically he said to them. And then we were literally with the miners, like literally walking with them amongst the miners. With a split second, myself and Leon decided we cannot be here.
Yeah.
At that particular moment, when we ran away, the police started shooting. That's when we found ourselves exposed to that gunfire because we were literally next to the miners and then we were hiding behind the rock.
I mean, Felix, I know because I've seen the visuals that you took those day. And by the way, we've tweeted some of them at Cape Talk. If you want to take a look at some of the photographs that Felix captured that day, they're amazing, horrifying, but really incredible storytelling in and of themselves. Felix, you've got a camera in front of your face. You are literally in the line of fire yourself, trying to dodge bullets, but also trying to capture the scene around you. You must have recognized the need to do so, the huge responsibility on the shoulders of the media who did manage to get there that day to tell the story. But at the same time, I mean, you're a human being who is going to be having a surge of adrenaline and that fight or flight response that one would have when bullets are flying around your ears. How did you reconcile those two? I mean, were you aware of the immediate physical danger to yourself, or was the camera almost acting like a buffer that day?
The camera was acting like a buffer that day because to myself, I thought these are rubber bullets that were going off and I'm not in danger at all. But through this viewfinder, through my camera, I'm looking at these guys falling and it's happening so fast. And there's this noise, there's this tear gas, there's this dust. But when everything settled after a minute or two, and I saw a couple of guys are bleeding, and I asked myself, what is it that's happening here? And I realized that some are motionless. That's when police wanted us away from there. And I think realized that this is a big mess. And we couldn't go. We told them we're not going anywhere. But basically, the camera was a buffer. And I'm grateful that I was there. And I'm grateful that I made the phone call to Polani, one of the guys who lived here, that he managed to not necessarily sneak us into the copy. Because if I didn't make that phone call, we wouldn't have seen anything. What we've recorded. So I made the phone call. We were allowed into the copy. Police didn't want us close by. But basically, I just felt this is history and it has never happened in this dispensation. And I don't know why it happened.
Did you have any kind of trauma counselling afterwards, Felix? Because, I mean, what you saw and, as you said, your ability to keep doing your job on the day spoke to your recognition of the responsibility you had that day to be the person recording this piece of history. But afterwards, I can't even begin to imagine what you must have thought and felt as you drove away from Marikana that day and made sense, if you could, of what you'd seen. Have you had any kind of professional help for that?
No, professional help for this. It's just that I talk to friends, family, and my kids about it. My granny, who's very dear to my heart, and I've never actually thought of going for professional counseling. Yes, there is there. It was basically part of Media 24 that we should go for counseling, but I've never went.
I mean, do you feel like you have come to some sense of, I don't want to use the word peace because you can't attach that word to these events, but I mean, I know you're in Marikana today. I know it was several years before you could bring yourself to go back there, but you have been back several times. What is it like for you to be back there today?
It brings all sorts of emotions, and I just don't believe that it happened, and it feels like it happened yesterday. And yeah, man, it's very sad, man. You sometimes feel why was I there? But on the other hand, I feel that yes, I needed to be in Marikana, and I become a bit emotional thinking about that day because it shouldn't have happened, you know. And looking through my camera and seeing people falling like that, I thought they were just tripping over one another, and police were using rubber bullets. That I wasn't aware that it was live ammunition. And I mean, Mambush, the guy in the cream blanket, 30 minutes before he was shot dead, he phoned me and said, look, we want to talk to you as the media. So all those things, they bring a lot of emotion. And it's difficult to deal with this thing, to be honest with you. Yes, you move away, you don't come to Marikana. But at some point, you just feel very defeated, man, that this thing transpired right in front of me. I took these images.
Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line to us from Marikana is Felix Langemandler, who is currently a photographer with the Daily Maverick, their photo editor, but on the day of the massacre 10 years ago was working for Media 24 as a photographer. Have you kept in touch, Felix, with those who survived, with those men that you'd been speaking to in the run-up to the shooting? Have you seen any of them today, for example?
I've spoken to two of them. Hug was very emotional. We literally, like a minute of a hug, me and Umzotolo and Tolani, we were like literally hugged. And I've been keeping in touch with them. Mind you, some of these guys are come where we grew up from. So we all homeboys and stuff like that. So when we in the villages, as well in the East, mingle and talk about these things and other socio-economic things that are happening around us. But other than that, it's just brother to brother. We met here, and I could see Colan is very emotional when he saw me.
Yeah.
But he had to move on because he's in the program of Marikana today. But we keep in touch not almost every day, but we are in contact.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking at visuals of the event that's underway. It's clear that there are large crowds at Marikana today. I know we heard talk of heavy police presence ensuring security at the event today. How are police received when they arrive for an event like this, given what happened 10 years ago?
I think people are welcoming them.
Really?
People have, they're welcoming them, but there is that sense that police murdered our brothers on the Skopje, but they are welcomed. They mingle around the people here, chat and all sorts of things. I don't think there's any grudges amongst them that I could see.
That's good to hear. The one thing that surprises me, and I know you've spoken before about the fact that nothing has been done to sort of memorialize the site. And here, once again today, we see crowds, we see people in uniform giving speeches, we see food vendors making the atmosphere almost festive at Marikana.
Yeah.
This was a site of tragedy. We're talking about dozens of lives lost, and that kopje still stands there unmarked. Does it bother you that there's no sort of formal acknowledgement on site of what happened there?
Yeah, it bothers me a lot, man. I mean, the people gathered at the kopje, but the actual shooting of the first scene is next to the informal settlement.
Yep.
You might even miss that place where the cars were shot at. There's a cattle crawl that's there now. And maybe next year now, you won't even see the spot where the cars were shot at.
Sure.
Second kopje is there, which was scene two. But where the first scene took place, where we were at when taking those images, if you blink, you might miss that place. So I think there needs to be a memorial erected around the Skopje and with the names of everyone. I mean, everyone who passed on.
Would that for you include the 10 people who died in the lead up to the August 16th shooting?
Yes, those people are important as well. They've got families, they've got children, they belong to their families. I mean, the police, security guards, minors as well, you know, they're human beings, they need to be recognized.
Felix, thank you so much for making time to step aside from the event and talk to us today. You've given a really unique and very human perspective on these events 10 years ago today, and we so appreciate your making time to do so. All the best to you.
Thanks a lot, Pippa. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the just staggering images as well. Felix Langemandler, photographer with the Daily Maverick these days, was with News 24 10 years ago, and we've shared some of the visuals he shot from that very unique perspective behind the miners as the bullets were flying. They've been shared on our Cape Talk and my personal Twitter profile at PJC Hudson if you'd like to take a look.